Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
John Rothstein, the college basketball maven, is with us as we quickly are approaching Selection Sunday. This Sunday, of course. John, how are you?
Never better, Joe. Never better.
Understood.
Evan left for a wedding?
Yeah.
He's taking the day off?
Yeah. Evan flew out yesterday. How about that? You got to give Evan credit. I really do.
He did the show.
Did the show. He's got a 9:30 flight last night to L.A. Not only does he go, he's got his wife and his son, little Jet, goes with him too. Gets in 4 o'clock in the morning our time. God bless him. And then he's flying back Sunday. So
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how you guys feel about this. I've always been apprehensive about taking days off in our business. I've missed weddings.
Well, next guy in.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to be Wally Pipp. Yeah. I mean, we know Malusis is capable.
You know, I've done this. I got to tell you something. Seriously, I've done this for 23 years, okay? Yeah. And I kind of agree with you. I mean, I've rarely taken a day off. You know, Chernoff basically thinks I've taken 23 years off. But, you know, I've rarely ever taken a day off. Even now, when I could have milked this thing and I could have been off for a month and got paid.
Right.
You know, no. That's not the way I operate. So I would never take more than a week off at any time when I'm even on vacation. So I kind of agree with that, John.
Day I've ever missed in 8 years at CBS Sports, I was in urgent care.
Really?
That's the only day.
Urgent care. We want to ask what the urgent care was for.
Yeah, food poisoning. Awful.
Was that what it was?
And I still felt like I could have done the Arizona halftime that night. They were playing UNLV.
And, Joe, I'll tell you this. I give my wife credit because even when I am off, I'm not really off. I'll tell you, having a 5, a 3, and a 1-year-old at home, that's harder work than what I do.
How do you guys deal with the people who aren't in our business? And, you know, that's fine, but they don't understand, you know, how much you have to maximize every opportunity. And they're like, oh, well, you know, we're having, you know, if you got to miss a wedding, but you have to do something. And, like, they're like, oh, just miss the show. The assignment. They think you can just miss an assignment.
Not a big deal.
Not a big deal, sure.
Take some time off.
I've missed a lot of weddings. I've had a lot of heated discussions over that.
Well, just make sure you don't miss, although maybe you'd be better off if you do, but just make sure you don't miss your own wedding. Maybe you would be better off, like I said, if you did.
Yeah.
You never know.
Well, Rothstein's already said two things. He doesn't like vacation because he doesn't like to relax, number one. Number two is all he does is eat. Eat and talk college hoops.
I've had to amend my diet on the last year.
Oh, really?
We'll get to that in the third segment.
My diet's been amended for me. So, I mean, like an exciting lunch is like yogurt, you know?
Yeah, no, I hear you.
It's John terrible. Rothstein's College Basketball Insider Report is brought to you by the five-hour energy brackets today at 5hourenergybrackets.com, where you can change your picks live during each tournament game. How about that? All right, John.
Let's do this.
A lot to get into. Let's start where Joe and we talked about last hour. How about the Johnnies? You got to do a better job if you're in the Big East tournament. You cannot have them playing at night one day. Next day, they win that game. They're rolling back in the noon game the next day.
You can't do that. This is what happens, though, when a tournament has a format, and this is obviously the same thing that has always been placed in the Big East tournament. It's the same thing that happened for years when teams were lower seeded. This is the penalty for finishing low in the conference. And look, St. John's had moments this year. Obviously, they didn't have Marcus Levet for anything in the Big East, which I think really hampered this team's ceiling. But still, when you look at the landscape of the bubble, and we're talking about it right now, I feel like 19 hours a day, because some of us are, you look at things, St. John's lost 10 games in Big East play by 7 points or less. Even though it didn't have Marcus Levet, even though Shamar and Pons missed a couple of games, I still feel like this season was a missed opportunity, because if they win half those games, they're firmly on the bubble.
Yeah.
They have it. I mean, guys, they've proven they beat Duke, they beat Villanova, they beat Butler without Pons. They had a nucleus to at least get to the play-in game in Dayton.
Yeah.
I think it's a missed opportunity.
No, they definitely did. Now, with that said about St. John's, how about Moose's Orange? 20-13, they got killed by Carolina the other night. Where are they? Are they getting in or not?
Syracuse, I do not have in my bracket right now, according to my matrix. Some people will say differently. I just think this, when you look at Syracuse, and they did have some moments. They beat Louisville. They beat Miami. They beat Clemson at home. I get that. But, you know, I know this because I've sat in Indianapolis during mock selections of the bracket, And when you get down to those last four teams in, the teams that are going to be in Dayton, right. I know this for a fact, the selection committee, when they're weighing one team against the other, they might say, shirts and skins, who's winning? And I'm saying this with complete objectivity. Syracuse does not look like an NCAA tournament team right now. When you look at the way that they've played, I think, in big spots. Now, you might say, well, they beat Clemson recently. Clemson is a depleted team without Dante Grantham, their best player, who missed obviously the season from February on because of an ACL tear. They have not been the same basketball team if you've been tracking them all year. And Syracuse, to me, this is the worst offensive team I have ever seen under Jim Boeheim.
All right, speaking of looking the part, jump away, another team that's on the bubble that lost earlier in their conference tournament because they've got a wonderful young player in Trae Young.
Mm-hmm.
How about Oklahoma? You want to say that? You think they're a lock in?
A lock. Now, this is what I'm going to tell you, and this is what's very important. The NCAA selection committee looks at the overall body of work. What are your wins? What are your losses? The overall body of work. Oklahoma has won at Wichita State. Oklahoma has swept TCU. Oklahoma has beaten Kansas and Texas Tech. Now, you might say, but Oklahoma's got, you know, double-figure losses. But the only team right now that Oklahoma has lost to that is not projected to be in the 2018 NCAA tournament is Iowa State. Hmm. Oklahoma is a lock.
Wow. All right, with that said, we saw Seton Hall lose last night to Creighton on a crazy buzzer beater putback layup. How about them? Well, where are they? They're going to make the tournament, I understand.
Middle of the bracket.
So 7-10. They're going to be in the 8-9 again?
8-9, 7-10, that range for Seton Hall.
Wow.
What about them? That now they've gone there before, and Willard's done a nice job with that program. What about this Seton Hall team advancing past their opening round game?
All depends on the matchups, but I've said this, Moose and Joe, you know, we talked about it a little bit the other day. I think the level of separation between teams this year is as small as it's ever been. And think about the situation we are looking at right now when you look at the elements of Selection Sunday. And this is really the truth right now. Virginia is going to be the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament. There's no doubt about that.
No matter what, even if they don't win it.
No matter what. Okay. Louisville is a team in a situation like Syracuse, who for all intents and purposes right now, okay, is hoping they get in the NCAA tournament. Virginia needed a miracle last week at the KFC Young Center and a banked-in three-point shot by DeAndre Hunter with no time left to beat Louisville,
yep,
a team that's hanging by a thread.
Right,
so that's the
right
level of separation,
right,
between one of the last teams in the NCAA tournament and the number one overall seed.
Well, let me ask you about Virginia then. I mean, Tony Bennett does a great job with that program. They,
yep,
play the slowdown. They're a defensive-minded team. But as we've all seen years gone by, they get very, very stagnant offensively.
Yep.
What about this Virginia team offensively being good enough to match what they can do defensively?
Well, the difference when you play Virginia versus other teams is they're a very difficult team to come back on because they don't turn the ball over and they utilize so much of the shot clock. So avoiding an early deficit is obviously very important against Virginia. Another thing, you have to be able to make shots and go over the top of the defense. Virginia's defense is more technique. Cincinnati's defense, another great defensive team, is more about effort and mentality. So when you think about Virginia and you think about the pack line defense that Tony Bennett implements, you're going to have people that can go over the top of the defense and make three-point shots. That's going to be a big requisite to knocking off the Cavs.
Let me ask you this, talking to John Rothstein, of course, really the maven of college basketball, Selection Sunday coming up Sunday. Is Kevin Ollie done at UConn?
Kevin Ollie, and I talked to several people about this morning on the Uber ride down here. Very smooth, by the way, on the
there
FDR. Happy
very
about
nice
that. Kevin Ollie is going to be owed in the neighborhood of $10 million if he is fired by UConn. So that is going to be a monetary decision that the UConn administration would have to make. But I will say this, and you know, I've said it after the game and I've written about it. It's not that hard to figure out UConn's issues right now. UConn doesn't have nearly the players that they've had in the past. And I'll give you a perfect example. UConn a year ago had three players from a highly rated recruiting class transfer. Juwan Durham, who transferred to Notre Dame, Steve Enoch, who transferred to Louisville, and Vance Jackson, who transferred to New Mexico. All three of those players were top 100 recruits. They also had Al-Tari Gilbert, a McDonald's All-American, miss each of the last two seasons due to a shoulder injury. If those three players don't transfer, I have no doubt this is an NCAA tournament team. But I don't think there's that really much to really look at when you think about UConn. They just don't have the personnel anymore. And I think it really, really manifested itself yesterday against an SMU team that didn't have Shake Milton, that didn't have Jarae Foster, their two best NBA prospects, and the Ponies were still able to advance in the American Conference Tournament. That, to me, was the lowest point I have seen UConn have in all my years covering the sport.
All right, let me. I want to, Moose, yeah. I don't mean to jump on you here, no. But I just want to, I got to say this. I mean, to me, UConn should, and I understand they want to play Division I football, they do that. What a mistake not being in the Big East. Well, I mean, to me, they are lost in the wilderness playing in the conference they play in now.
Well, Joe, and I can tell you this because about a year ago I reported this story. UConn and the Big East had mutual interest, and football was the elephant in the room. But the Big East, if it could take UConn as a basketball-only member, would extend its conference schedule to 20 league games from 18 to keep pace with the Big Ten and the ACC and keep the double round robin format intact. Now, UConn's apprehension of that is obviously, well, what are we going to do about our football? But you, Moose, and I both know that when you think about UConn, you think about Jim Calhoun, you think about Rip Hamilton, you think about Ray Allen.
Right.
But I can tell you this, that there was mutual interest between the two sides, but football was the issue.
Yeah, I mean, they should be playing in the Big East tournament.
Of course.
But you mentioned the payout for Ollie, playing off Joe's question. Does Ollie have the support of the leadership on that campus that he's the right guy for that job?
When you win a national championship, you build a lot of equity. You build a lot of equity.
Even two losing seasons equity.
Two losing seasons, and there, obviously there's a lot of injuries. But, you know, the question is this. Is UConn going to decide that Kevin Ollie, because he won a national championship, because he was a great player at UConn,
yep,
has the right and earned the right and the opportunity to rebuild this program? Because this is the situation I look at when you look at UConn. Terry Larrier, their second-best player right now, has already said that he's going to pursue professional opportunities, wherever that may be. He wants to play basketball for money. So he's, you know, obviously not returning. Jalen Adams is a player who only has 1 year left of eligibility. So even if he comes back, he only has 1 year left, and he does not have to pursue professional opportunities. This, to me, is going to be a rebuild of epic proportions. And think about the league right now. The league with Wichita State is viewed differently. Cincinnati, again, in contention for a two seed.
Right,
Kelvin
right.
Sampson, who, again, we all know went to a Final Four at Oklahoma, is building something at Houston. Houston in the right matchup could be a second weekend team. And I've said this time and time again, and you guys probably feel the same way. If UConn and Memphis had Jim Calhoun and John Calipari as their coaches, the American Conference is a heck of a league.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really what you need to look at. Like, that league, okay, is getting nothing out of UConn and Memphis and is still in firm position to get three teams in the field coming up Sunday night.
Penny Hardaway going to coach Memphis?
That's another situation, you know, monetarily that you have to look at, Joe. I mean, the buyout for Tubby Smith is very similar to the situation with Kevin Ollie. It's very similar to the situation with Kevin Stallings. You're talking about $10 million, not to coach. That's kind of what we heard your buyout is.
Well, hello.
what is? I mean, Tubby the other day came across so poorly when he's questioning guys transferring. I mean, down in Memphis, I know six guys transferred off of his team a year ago, but if you're a Division I basketball player, you should be free to play, transfer if a situation's not working out. Meanwhile, he's a guy who went from Tulsa to Kentucky, Kentucky to Minnesota, Minnesota. He's jumped all over the place as a college head coach.
Yeah, the transfer thing, you know, we could debate back and forth a million times. We'll save that for, you know, when we go to Joe's place over
but
the summer.
But it makes no sense. I mean, Tubby comes across so poorly in that scenario.
Yeah,
and that's where, if I were Memphis, I'd want Penny Hardaway to be my head coach.
Well, if you think about what we're just saying right now, and I'm not disagreeing with you, but this is like the landscape of things right now. Tubby Smith has taken five schools to the NCAA tournament.
Right.
He's won a national championship. And Tubby Smith, by the way, won his 20th game yesterday. And he lost, you know, two players who transferred to Kansas, another player who transferred to Ole Miss. And people are without question saying, and this is nothing against Penny, we want Penny to coach our team. So you want somebody who's never coached before, because he has obviously better recruiting ties, to coach over somebody who's taken five schools to the NCAA tournament and won a national championship.
Well, Penny also has that history of Memphis, too.
Well, that's
but he's
it.
Never coached.
I get
but he's never coached in college.
But we've seen it with Ewing. We've seen it with Mullen. I mean, it seems to be like the new trend. You know, best player in the history of the school and let him be the coach.
It's a trend, but I will say this. The only example where this thing was a grand slam when you made that type of a hire, and the jury's still out on Ewing and Mullen. They've both had, you know, moments of promise. The only time that type of hire was a grand slam was Fred Hoiberg. That's the only time it's been a grand slam. Now, Patrick's done a great job. Chris Mullins obviously got a great roster in place right now at St. John's. They've had some big wins. But the only time when you hire a famous alum to come back and coach with no coaching experience, that's been a grand slam, a walk-off home run, has been Fred Hoiberg.
Interesting. All right, now how about Notre Dame, bro? Are they in or not?
On the cusp right now, Joe. You know, I thought so after the Virginia Tech game, but what happened was, and this is what happens the last couple of days before the tournament, teams on the bubble have an opportunity to enhance their respective standing because they're playing neutral site games against quality competition. And the selection committee obviously is going to view a neutral site game more so than a home game.
Right.
Because it obviously is on a neutral court.
Sure.
So when a team like Alabama beats a team like A&M that's projected as an 8-9 seed on a neutral court, that hurts Notre Dame. I think teams like Notre Dame, like Arizona State, like Louisville, Syracuse, it's going to be a long, long 48 hours coming up from now until Selection Sunday.
We got John Rothstein in studio. It's a Friday midday. Joe and Evan, Mark Malusis in for Evan. He's going to hang out with us. We're going to talk a little Carolina Duke, big matchup.
Yeah, we got to get in. I got a couple other things we got to throw at Rothstein.
Yeah,
too,
no question about it. Yeah, he's hanging in. He's answering the phone. He's emails. He's got it all going, Joe.
It's Rothstein is. It's amazing what the guy does.
It really is. He's just a busy bee.
Like you and Rothstein. I mean, I can't think of two guys that are more active that work harder than you two guys.
We're right there. We'd be
God
like neck
bless
and
you,
neck.
Man. I'm trying to do as little work as possible.
But Joe, you did the overnight for all those years.
I did do 9 years of overnight.
You did.
And those were fun years. There's no doubt about it.
Yes. How did you deal with just like the routine when like everybody's going to work and you're going home?
Here's the bottom line, man. I was young, because a lot younger. I was like your age or Moose's age when I started doing that. And, you know, this was my opportunity to get into radio. What do you think I'm going to say? Oh, I'm not going to do it?
No. I remember listening, early 2000s with the Isaiah Thomas Knicks days.
Yeah. Joe's the one that gave me the nickname Moose.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, the first overnight I stepped in for, I think it was Dave the Rave Corzine.
Dave the Rave was producing
at that time, right? And I stepped in and filled in, went through training with Dave and Sugar Ray. And first overnight I worked with you, you said, Malusis, what is that? I go, it's Lithuanian. He goes, I'm going to call you Moose.
I got to say this, too. I know we got to go to break and Dove's getting delirious. But with that said, look at all the superstars now. These guys like Malusis, like Giannotti, like Sal Licata.
Giannotti does great impressions.
He definitely does me very well.
Oh, tremendous.
But, I mean, you look at all like these guys, Jerry Recco, these guys that all came along as like board ops or whatever you want to say, guys that were hanging out in the newsroom, and now they're all like they're superstars, all these guys now.
Nah, we got to work your rear end off.
You guys have done that. Like I said, I'm trying to do as little work as possible. So that's why I give you credit.
Joe, I keep going back to like, you know, and we can all relate to this. Like when people are like, oh, you can't come to the wedding, you're like, no, we got to work.
Yeah, got to work.
You got to miss the bar mitzvah. You got to miss the communion. No, we got to work.
I told you, if you miss your wedding, that might be a good thing. You never know.
877-337. My wife tells me all the time I should have missed my own wedding.
Oh, God.
Can't believe you didn't with the way you work. All right, we're back, 11:28. Joe Beningo, Mark Malusis, Mark filling in for Evan, who was in California at a wedding. The one and only John Rothstein, Mr. College Basketball, is with us as well. John, give me the one and two line the way you see it right now.
All right, Virginia, Villanova, Xavier, locks for the
one line.
Now, I do think this. If Kansas falls in the Big 12 tournament, right?
Right.
And Duke wins tonight against Carolina and against Virginia on Saturday, I think Kansas will be in a situation where it falls to the two line, and Duke is moved to the one line.
That's if Duke wins the tournament.
That's if Duke beats Virginia and Carolina.
Kansas doesn't win the tournament.
Now, Cincinnati is also on the two line.
Wow.
So that gives us another, obviously, two seed right there.
Okay.
And then I think, you know, we're going to have to wait and see what happens elsewhere in the bracket, so to speak. But I think that's what we're looking at right now. I mean, there are other teams in the mix. Auburn is still in the mix. Purdue is in the mix. Carolina's in the mix for a two seed. But
what?
I feel really strong, Joe, about those six.
Okay.
The three number ones, Kansas, Duke, Cincinnati, about being on the two line.
So Michigan State has dropped from the two line in your mind?
Yes. Lost to Michigan, absolutely.
So they're going to be a three, right?
Yeah, I have Michigan State as a three in my bracket.
Okay, and where's Michigan then? After, you know, because they've been tremendous. They win the tournament again. What about them?
You know, Michigan is a team, obviously, I think that's rising for all intents and purposes. But, I mean, it's still, and this is what I go back to, it's the overall body of work. So I think Michigan is a 3-4.
3-4 for the – and they're a dangerous 3-4.
The dangerous
3-4. Very dangerous.
I think probably because Michigan was able to get two neutral site wins over Michigan State and Purdue. I would have them on the three line right now.
They're maybe on Michigan State at East Lansing, too.
Yeah. Now, for sure, I think Michigan right now is on the three line.
Okay.
John, you mentioned wide open, as wide open as you can remember.
Yes.
Joe asked you the top two lines. I'll ask you this way. How many teams, I know the brackets, I know the path all depends, but conceivably speaking, how many teams can John Rothstein make an argument for winning a national championship this year?
Double figures.
Really, that many?
Double figures.
Yeah, like 12?
I think 10 to 12.
10 to 12 teams, 10
to 12
win the
teams could win a national championship, yeah. Like, you wouldn't be shocked.
Do you think that's good for college basketball, that you don't have that team? You don't have the Kentucky team? You don't have the
Wisconsin team with Kaminsky and Decker? Yeah,
is it good for college basketball that there's much parity?
I think, Moose, Joe, for sports people like us, we could have it either way. We could have great parity and unpredictable basketball, or we could have the superpowers. I, though, do think this, and I will admit this, and you guys know I cover college basketball every day of the year, for people from the periphery to get interested in the NCAA tournament, you have to have a team like the Kentucky team that started 38-0, like the Duke team, obviously, that had Okafor and Tyus Jones and Winslow, like the Wisconsin team that had Kaminsky, Decker, Nigel Hayes. So I think sports fans and people in college basketball are going to be excited no matter what. But to get people in, the casual observer, you need a superpower.
Yeah. I tell you, look, as a guy that goes back to, the first NCAA championship game I watched was Loyola in Chicago against Cincinnati in 1963. So for a guy that goes back that far, I miss the days when these guys had to be there at least 3 or 4 years, because it was just a complete different feel, watching the entire UCLA championship run. And I went from rooting against UCLA during the Kareem years to rooting for them when Bill Walton was there. And just but all of that, just watching all of that, the Duke years with Leitner and Bobby Hurley, Ewing at Georgetown in the 80s, Phi Slamma Jamma, it was just a different feel than it is now, John. I mean, I know it's never going to be this way again, but it's a different feel than it used to be.
No,
it
definitely is. And, one of the things that we all know is players just aren't staying in school that many years.
No,
and that's the big difference.
That's the point. That's the reason.
And that's the big difference.
Yeah.
Well, but it hurts the game. I mean, it does. And it hurts because the familiarity you have with the programs and the teams. It seems like every single year, John, and you know it, because you cover it. You know these teams like the back of the – you almost have to reestablish yourself with every program about who's there, who's not, to play to Joe's point. You knew when Leitner lost early on, he was going to be back, right? You knew when Duke got their doors blown off in Denver against UNLV,
right,
and they had Ala Abdelnaby on that team. You knew that Duke team was at the start of something special, and they were going to be back the following year.
And then you had the classic, and to make it even better, you had that classic Final Four game against UNLV the next year
in
when UNLV was undefeated.
Yes.
Yeah.
You don't get
that's
that.
One of the great games you ever had in the history of the game.
No question. 100%. And, that, too, you think about how rare that is. That UNLV team won 45 games in a row.
Yeah.
45 games in a row.
Right.
34-0 going into that Duke game in 91 before they lost 79-77.
Will we ever, let me ask you a question. We haven't had an undefeated team since the 76 Bobby Knight Hoosiers. Okay, so that's almost 50 years now, 40 whatever it is years now. 42, I guess. Will we ever see an undefeated team in college basketball again?
I think considering the way the rules are right now, that's difficult to see. If something changes, obviously.
Kentucky went to the Final Four a couple years ago and lost to Wisconsin.
But I think the likelihood of seeing again what happened with that team, having the Harrisons and Willie Cauley-Stein and Poitras go back for another year,
right,
and then seeing a class of Devin Booker, Trey Lyles, Carl Anthony Towns, Tyler
right.
Ulis join
right.
that core, I think that's lightning in a bottle.
John, it seems like NBA wants it to change. It seems like there's a lot of coaches that look at the one-and-done rule with a raised eyebrow. How about this one-and-done rule being out and allowing 18-year-olds to go right to the NBA draft?
That is an NBA decision first.
Right.
And, I talked to Jay Wright about this last week, and he made the point that, college basketball needs the NBA's help, because if there are players out there that want to play basketball for money and want to obviously explore that avenue and aren't interested in being in school, then they should have the right to either go to the NBA or go to the G League. I think if that rule comes back, you're going to see maybe the talent base in college basketball watered down a little bit. But I do think that for all intents and purposes, the sport might be healthier. Hmm.
John Rothstein with us, the maven of college basketball, a couple days away from Selection Sunday. All right, let's look at some of these lower teams. How about a team like Iona? Local team, I think it's 3 years in a row, Clouse has had them in the tournament. Can a team like Iona win a game? I mean, you know, if they're not in the play-in games, but I mean, can they win a game somewhere along the line in this tournament?
Well, you know, the biggest thing is this. Iona has not had a fortunate draw the last couple of NCAA tournaments. They've played Iowa State and Oregon their past couple of trips in the round of 64.
Right.
Iowa State and Oregon, from a style perspective, were Iona on steroids. For Iona to have a chance to pull an upset in the round of 64, they need to be in a situation where they're not playing a team that has a similar makeup as they do.
How about LIU Brooklyn playing along the local flair? That is a staggering loss for Wagner. I mean, how many times can you make it to – you're sitting at home. You got the title game at
it's
home.
Terrible.
You're undefeated.
We see it all the time.
Undefeated at home throughout the regular season, and you lose the championship game on your home court. What about LIU Brooklyn, who went into Wagner and stunned them as nearly a double-digit underdog?
Well, you know, it's the pressure, again, of being a favorite in a mid-major conference tournament with everything on the line because you have no margin for error. And it's the same thing that happened last night with Middle Tennessee.
Yeah.
Middle Tennessee was going to be a trendy, major trendy mid-major pick to do some damage on Selection Sunday, but they won the league tournament, won the league regular season title last Thursday, okay, against Western Kentucky. They lose at home Saturday night against Marshall, and then, for all intents and purposes, again, you look at this, what happens, they fell to a Southern Miss team that wasn't even on the radar of getting an automatic bid. This is the pressure that you play with, and I say this all the time. When you're a mid-major coach and you're not just coaching for a chance to take your team to the NCAA tournament, you're coaching for a chance to put yourself in a different monetary situation. There is nothing in college basketball like that pressure.
No, hey, look, there's no question about that. Give me a team that's a sleeper, you would call a sleeper team that you think could make a significant run into the tournament, maybe get to an Elite Eight or something like that.
And you're saying from like a major conference?
Well, I mean,
off
just
the
give
radar?
Me a sleeper. I mean, I don't think you're going to give me LIU, but, you know, give me a sleeper.
I'll give you three.
Go ahead.
Houston.
Right.
Gonzaga.
Right.
Nevada.
But as Gonzaga's been in the top ten, is they really
all right. I mean, they're not getting the attention as some of the other.
That they did last year, went to the finals last year.
I would say Houston for sure. I would also say Nevada with Eric Musselman. He's done an outstanding job.
Right. Okay.
And then looking at the landscape right now, I mean, Wichita State, obviously not a sleeper. I would say those two, and then I would also, you know, look closely at teams that maybe had injuries in high major conferences. Those two for sure, Joe, Houston and Nevada. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I'd have to think a little bit about others.
We're okay. Talking to John Rothstein in studio, CBS FanRag Sports, and also check out his podcast, College Hoops Today, on iTunes. Does a fantastic job. John, Joe asked you about sleepers. What about the mid-major sleeper, right? Charlotte, when you look at some of these mid-major schools that are going to really make this NCAA tournament, they do each and every year, that all of a sudden they're in the Sweet 16 and they've got three guys that could play at a high Division I. Give me a couple mid-majors you think could surprise.
Love Bucknell, only lost to West Virginia by 6 last year in the round of 64. 5 leading scorers who are juniors and seniors, played a vicious non-conference schedule, featured games at North Carolina, Arkansas, and Maryland. Also, very curious to see, obviously, Vermont. Vermont plays in the American East Conference Championship game Saturday morning, so they still have to get the automatic bid. Vermont was very close this year to winning a game at Rupp Arena against Kentucky, and Vermont was also competitive last year with Purdue in the round of 64. The guy you want to watch on Vermont, a quick, diminutive guard, great in ball screen situations, named Trey Bell Haynes. So right now, I like Bucknell, I like Vermont, and I'm on my radar.
I know Evan asks you this all the time. How close are we to that 16 seed beating a 1?
You know, it would take the right alignment, Joe. Like, you would have to have a veteran team and a vulnerable 1. I don't see that right now. I think you would have to have a situation almost like where you have a school like Harvard, who is, you know, obviously recruited at a higher level under Tommy Amaker, and they win the Ivy League, and maybe they're underseeded because their best player, Bryce Aiken, has been out of the lineup since February due to a knee injury. I think if you had something like that happen, and let's say maybe, you know, Udoka Azubuike didn't come back for Kansas right away, something of that nature, but you need a situation where things align the right way.
And that's the interesting part of this committee, because Joe and I, we've gone through who's in, who's out, who's on the bubble, who's not, mid-major surprises, major conference, what team could go on a run. It's not a matter of just all of a sudden just finding the top 68 teams from their perspective. It's also putting together a bracket that's entertaining. It's also looking at the matchups.
That's fair.
And looking and saying, this is going to – looking at those lines, a 215, a 314, looking at those matchups to say, this matchup is going to give us the best game.
Right. And, I mean, I think a perfect example is a couple of years ago when Steve Masiello was coaching Manhattan and they got matched up with Louisville.
Yeah.
That was a great early storyline in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, but that's the difficult aspect they have to do because matchups make the tournament.
Matchups makes the tournament, and it goes back, you know, you want to go back also to when Wichita State was undefeated a couple years ago and Kentucky was conveniently in the 8-9 game in that region.
Oh, that was a great game.
Great game, but that's all obviously part of a master plan.
Right.
And, Joe, a big shout-out to Subway. They just came by and delivered tremendous wraps for everyone here at WFAN.
The people on the street will be – like, you actually, like, get to see, like, salespeople coming into the area when they're not trying to get you to, you know, to help them sell something. They're looking for food now.
Well, everyone's out there. It's fantastic. I mean, it's double meat, chef-inspired signature wraps, $6.99 each, and that's with double meat. Great deal. Three of the totally new wraps, and each of its own chef-inspired recipe. You can make it the way you want, of course, any of the times. But there's chicken Caesar on a spinach wrap, the Chipotle Southwest steak and cheese on a tomato basil wrap, or the turkey bacon guacamole on a tomato basil wrap with loaded provolone, lettuce, tomatoes, onions, and ranch.
Wow!
Thank you, Subway.
God bless you guys, man. I'm looking at like Eggo waffles, you know.
At least Terry left you prepared, Joe. Yeah,
Eggo waffles? Like the kind you make? Like in the,
kind you put in a toaster. Bro, I can barely boil water. Yeah. You're talking about making things.
You don't cook at all, Joe?
No, I don't. You cook, please. By the way, I got to say, this five-hour energy thing where they got like this thing like in the middle of the game, you could change your pick.
Yeah.
You see that?
Yeah.
Up until like 4 minutes to go in the game?
Right.
And that's insanity.
That's Rothstein's sponsor, Joe.
Oh, my God. John, that's like insane.
I've never taken a five-hour energy.
Really?
You don't need it.
I mean, I don't need
the energy level you have.
I just eat a lot of blueberries. A
lot of blueberries.
Antioxidants.
Wow. Well, you're on. Are you doing like triathlons too coming up?
No triathlons. You know, the frustrating part of March, you don't have time to go to the gym, so you feel a little verklempt. You know,
you just don't feel.
You know,
you're talking to the wrong guy about verklempt.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
You're also talking to the wrong guy about the gym. Yeah, I haven't been in the gym in 2 years.
But you got three kids.
That's not.
You got no
excuse.
Time, right?
Yeah, it's not the.
Could you make? Let me ask you this.
I was using the excuse about kids before I had kids.
Really?
Yeah, that's a good one, bro. Well, maybe you did. You just didn't know.
What was the last time you went a regular gym routine, Moose?
4 years ago. Three years ago.
There you go.
So let me ask you. I got to ask you this, John. Seriously, we're talking to the great John Rossi. So once the tournament's over.
Yep.
Now what? I mean, you on recruiting trips with coaches? I mean, what are you doing?
Well, there's still stuff to cover on a regular basis, like, you know, who's going to the NBA, who's transferring, well, who's playing who next season. And, you know, I still got a podcast once a week, a column once a week. But no, you're more like you're kind of working like a regular job.
And then you find out who's, if UConn's looking for a coach.
Yeah.
Who's going to hire the.
My thing is, there's always problems to solve, Joe. And if there's no problems to solve, I have to wake up, you know, in the morning, create problems and try and solve them.
I understand.
Let's take a couple calls here for Johnny.
Problems.
Let's head out to Wyckoff. It's Kenny. What's going on, Kenny?
Kenny, how are you? What's up, Ken?
Good. Hey, Joe, I had no power yesterday, so my son and I went over to Anthony's Coal Fire Pizza on 17 and was able to spend some time there watching some games. That's a good spot there.
Yeah, no, you know, I'm very lucky with the power because, like you said, Wyckoff, Oakland, Allendale, all right around me, all no power.
Got hammered.
Yep,
hey, so what do you think? Sunday we'll have Tiger on 18 and go right into the selection show?
I tell you what, how good would that be? Oh, my God.
Wow.
Especially if he's playing somebody. Now, I don't know what Spieth is doing because Spieth was playing with him. Spieth and Stenson were playing with him. I don't know what they were doing. But especially if you got somebody, you know, a relatively big guy going down the stretch with him, you know?
Yeah, that'd be wild. Yeah. If it goes into a tie and they have to go past the selection show time.
Yeah, but here's one thing. But here's one thing about the selection show. Now, because the selection show is trying to really stick it to everybody, and what they're going to do is just tell you who's in the tournament and then tell you who's in the brackets, you're probably not missing anything.
No.
You're right. So listen, I don't know if you talked about it. With Bonzi Colson back and getting beat last night by a very good team, not like the Sisters of the Poor, where do you think Notre Dame stacks up right now?
They're right on the cusp. I mean, they got neutral site wins with Wichita State and Virginia Tech with Bonzi in the lineup. They've lost to Ball State and Indiana with Bonzi in the lineup. Now, there's no doubt that Notre Dame's an NCAA tournament team if they have Colson the whole year, but we've got to see what shakes out here over the next couple of days.
Right, but how do they factor it in? Do they look at the Irish now healthy, or do they look at his resume? Where are they looking at Notre Dame?
What it's always been described to me is this, and it's always, you know, taken into consideration differently. If you have a team that is clearly, obviously a tournament team with somebody in the lineup, then that's going to carry the weight. Now, the problem for Notre Dame is you have the loss to Ball State. You have the loss to Indiana with Colson still in the lineup. That back end of the bubble this year is very, very fluid. Very fluid. We saw it yesterday with Alabama with Sexton making that shot. It's going to be real interesting to see what the committee does in those last couple of spots.
You know, I want to go back to one team, too, because I mentioned this to you last week, but I'm going to throw them at you again. Penn State, no shot they get in, right?
Don't see it, Joe. Only three big-time victories.
Okay. And all of them against Ohio State.
All of them against Ohio State.
All right, let's head out to Jamesburg, New Jersey. It's Scott. It's the fan. What's going on, Scott?
Scott, how are you?
What's up, guys? How are you today?
Great, Scott.
John, proud Seton Hall alumni, and this senior class has done so much for our program. I'm really looking forward to March Madness, and it's crazy to think that in my mind, I think it might be a blessing in disguise that they lost last night, because it ends up giving Desi Rodriguez and Ishmael Sinoco more time to recover for the tournament next week.
Well, another thing, too, you got to think about is, like, and this is one thing, you know, I think Seton Hall fans need to do a better job of. Think of what Kevin Willard has done the last 3 years. I mean, Seton Hall is about to play in its third straight NCAA tournament. Enjoy the moment for a second.
Oh, John, I'm enjoying every moment of it, John. I got to tell you something. Just like I said, the group that he's put together, this team shows a lot of character and true grit. I don't want to get ahead of myself. I'm one of the people that still believes, even in the midst of that 3 out of 4 losing streak and losing at Georgetown, that game at Xavier. But one thing I've thought all along, John, this is a senior-dominated team, very gritty. They've won big games over the last 4 years. I truly believe this team is going to be dangerous in the tournament. I think this team could be this year's South Carolina. I think they could beat anyone. I really believe that.
I think you don't have a lot of objectivity.
John, no objectivity.
Look, could they? Absolutely. This is the type of thing where, and again, it's not a crutch of an answer, but we got to see the brackets. I mean, because, you know, regardless, like, and this is what it comes down to. UConn in 2014 with Shabazz Napier, they played a St. Joe's team that won the Atlantic 10 tournament. St. Joe's, okay, was up one late in the game, and Amita Brima, a 35% free throw shooter, made a shot to tie the game, and UConn won in overtime. That's how close UConn was to losing in the round of 64.
No, that's fair. But I guess to play to his point, the Seton Hall fans, Scott, if you look at the way that they're starting five and the way that they've got senior leadership, veteran team, guard play, there's things to like about Willard's team that if in the right region, if you have the right matchup,
Agreed.
Seton Hall can do things this March.
I agree for sure.
All right, how about Missouri with Porter coming back?
Missouri was a 21 team without Michael Porter Jr. They had rhythm. They had chemistry. Obviously, a little bit rusty yesterday. They're going to be a unique team, a magnetic team in the NCAA tournament because of his presence. But, you know, guys, I've got to be honest right now. I am a little bit tepid about adding such an important piece 30 games into the season. I'll give you a perfect example. Duke in 2010-2011. Lost Kyrie Irving in December, and they gave Nolan Smith the ball, and he became their primary point guard. Duke had a one seed. They brought Kyrie Irving back. They wound up getting ambushed by Arizona in the Sweet 16.
Yep.
And talking to guys like Chris Collins and Steve Wojciechowski after that, they never had the same flow because they played 30 games with Nolan Smith as their primary point guard. And you just have to wonder right now, Missouri had something in place. They got used to playing together, and now you're adding somebody who's a lottery pick, which is great from a talent perspective, but rhythm and chemistry are very important.
All right, John, give me your Final Four. What do you think?
That's tough, Joe.
I know, it's tough, but it's you.
I don't have the brackets in front of me. Like, and I'm not trying to cop out. Like, I'd say right now, if you're looking for, I think, the safest choices to go to a Final Four, and safe means nothing this year, but I would say Virginia, Michigan State, Villanova. I think Duke has the highest ceiling, and Duke's been much better defensively. Duke, since it switched to a 2-3 zone, has been a significantly better defensive team.
Will they beat Carolina tonight?
Yes. They're only giving up 58.5 points in their last seven games. And, you know, I've talked to a number of NBA personnel about this. You know, you're looking at Marvin Bagley right now and what he's doing, and you're looking at a better version of Chris Bosh.
You know, it would be ironic if Miller and Arizona get there with everything surrounding that program.
100%. Yeah. And that's a major storyline in the NCAA tournament because, as we know, Sean Miller, one Elite Eight at Xavier, three Elite Eights, multiple Sweet 16s at Arizona, has never gotten to a Final Four. And he has the best player he's ever had this year in DeAndre Ayton.
Is this Arizona team the best team that he's had
out
there?
No. This Arizona team has holes at point guard and it has holes with its depth. But they do have the best player that he's ever had in DeAndre Ayton.
All right, to play to Beninga Joe's point here a moment ago, you can't pick the Final Four. If we asked you and said, pick one team right now that you think wins the national championship, you said it's wide open, there's 12. Which team are you the most confident in?
Virginia.
Really?
Virginia or Michigan State, I would say.
I follow Michigan State because my grandson goes there as a freshman. So I've been really watching them. I know they only lost four games. They haven't had, you know, they don't have that look of a Final Four team. But you really think they can win the national championship now, right?
I think they're one of a bunch of teams that could win the national championship. But,
really?
Guys, we're entering an NCAA tournament with no favorite. That's
right,
what we have to understand. Like, you know, you can make a case for several different teams. Look, there's no doubt about it, and this is one thing I wrote, you know, earlier this week. Duke's trajectory right now with the way they're playing late and the way they're coming together is very similar to what we saw in 2015. Now, it's not identical. The team isn't identical to the 2015 team, but we saw late that year Duke reach another gear. And now you look at the makeup of that team. There was freshmen in key spots. There was Tyus Jones. There was Justice Winslow. There was Okafor. There was Grayson Allen. Now, all of a sudden, you look at this team, Carter, Bagley, Bolden, all solidifying their roles up front. They're getting Duval and Allen, obviously, in flow. And right now, for the first time, and this really stood out last night, finally, for the first time in the last month, you have Grayson Allen and Marvin Bagley playing at a high level at the same time. That hasn't happened.
It's going to be fun, that Carolina-Duke game. Where are you today, John? You're
studio.
All decked out. Where are you going?
Studio. I'm going
to
the studio right
Where
this.
Can we see John Rothstein today?
CBS Sports Network today and through the rest of the month.
Now, you're back with us Monday, John, again? Or no?
Every Monday and Friday through the end of
the tournament.
11 o'clock Eastern.
Stellar.
And John Rothstein's College Basketball Insider Report is brought to you by 5-Hour Energy Brackets today. Joe mentioned it a couple minutes ago. There's approximately 7,680 minutes of college basketball played in March. Don't miss a single second. Grab a 5-Hour Energy. Get back to 100% as soon as you can and get back to the games and visit 5HourEnergyBrackets.com for more madness and more fun. John, thank you, brother.
John,
thank you, guys.
We'll see you Monday, John.
There you go. As the field is 68. I'm looking forward to the tournament, Joe.
The tournament's always good. You know, the one thing about the tournament, though, now, and it's kind of unfortunate, people get more excited about the first 4 days because everybody's delirious with their bracket, and it's almost like as the big games come, you know, as the bigger teams are in and the bigger games come on, it's almost like the interest, you know, wanes because of that.
Well, that's true. The first 2 days are really what makes the tournament.
Right. No question about it.
When you're sitting there all afternoon, all night, watching college hoops, seeing the buzzer beaters, the upsets, that's what makes the tournament.
Right.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.